Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Yeah, we should be hearing some stuff today on what's going on with some of these rules proposals and in the NFL. I'm for it. I wouldn't mind either way. If they keep the playoff seeding the way it is, that's fine. But I would not be opposed to changing what the Lions have proposed here. I mean, again, late season games would matter more, I think, around the league. And you're fighting. Imagine week 18 game. You're like, if you win, you're the third seed. If you lose, you're the sixth seed. That's a difference between a home game. Right now, it's like, yeah, I already got the division wrapped up. So you kind of rest your guys, right? There could also be something said for, hey, we won our division. We're resting our guys. And maybe you think that should be the reward. And that's cool. As far as the tush push is concerned, I have some thoughts on that. I'll get to it later because I've always thought the same thing about that type of play that you may have heard me talk about. Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio here on WGR Sports Radio 550. And of course, it is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Joining me right now in our WGR studios is our guy, Brayton Wilson from WBEN and WGR, just Odyssey All-Star here in Buffalo. Thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate
Thanks, Sal. Appreciate you having me on.
You got it. And the reason I'm having Brayton in today... I know you went on the stadium tour
yes.
a couple weeks ago with a lot of the news organizations. It's kind of interesting. I've been on a couple stadium tours, but the last couple, I was there for the topping out ceremony, but the last two tours that people did inside the stadium, I was off those specific days for whatever reason, so I didn't get a chance to go. So I was watching your coverage, WBEN.com, checking it out. All right, just kind of tell us about how they presented it to the media before we get into the meats and bones of what you saw.
So the announcement originally was for a partnership, a founding partnership with Verizon. Verizon's going to be the 5G partner with the Bills and provide the latest 5G technology and innovative stuff for fans to be able to interact with one another and be able to get on social media and everything like that to make the fan experience that much more better at the new Highmark Stadium. I think a lot of people know that at the current stadium, it's kind of difficult if you don't have Wi-Fi access at some point anywhere in the stadium, that it's almost impossible to get any sort of service. So Verizon announced that they are upgrading those services a little bit for the final season of the stadium. They're going to add another some sort of tower or something like that to be able to enhance those levels of engagement a little bit more. But in the new stadium, it's set to be 5G. It's set to be upgraded and up to standard with all the other stadiums in the NFL. Because a few years ago, they announced that as just like, oh, you know, a number of stadiums around the league is going to get the new latest 5G innovative technology to allow people to be able to tweet and be able to interact with one another as fast and as optimally as possible. And Buffalo was kind of left out of that grouping of stadiums, especially like with the newer ones like SoFi and Allegiant and those ones. But the Bills are going to get that upgrade now with the new stadium. So that was part of the original.
Let me ask you this, and I know this may sound like a dumb question, but I guarantee you there's someone thinking this out there right now. So I'll ask you, does it matter if you're not with Verizon when your phone with your phone? Does that matter? Like you're an AT&T customer, a T-Mobile customer.
Right.
You go into the stadium. Will your Wi-Fi be any different? Your ability to connect fast speed, all that be any different than a Verizon customer?
Yeah, they made it seem like it's going to be pretty optimal with right. any sort of carrier, but Verizon is just that main component that's going to be allowing people to do the 5G. So with that announcement, after they did the formal announcement. We talked to Pete Guelli, got the chance to get more information about him with the status of the stadium in terms of the timeline, and he says it's on time. It's, you know, still slated to open for July 2026, and then we got on a bus and went over into the stadium and was able to just walk around a little bit, get some photos, some videos from field level of the stadium, the work that's ongoing right now. I mean, it's as you saw, it was topped out back a couple, almost 2 months now.
Yep.
And going in there last week, Monday, most of the canopy is all done. They had a couple of pieces that they still needed to put on top of it, but everything is pretty much all closed in at this point, and now it's just getting the inner parts and the final outer facade of the building all sort of finalized, and then it's the fast track to opening in July.
Did I see seats, actually, in some of these pictures and video?
There were a few seats. The Bills put out a promotional video or something like that a few days before we got in there of, you know, the first seats being put in. And I think there was maybe only a dozen seats at two separate parts of where they're putting them in. But, like, the facets that those seats sit on and that are bolted in on, those are being implemented as we speak. So those were in, and there were a few seats, but nothing that was, like, substantial.
We played in the 11-day power play golf event down at Holiday Valley yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way back, I drove the foursome we had, Jeremy and Nate and Joe. And on the way back, we were driving up the 219, and then we got on the 90, and you could see, I think from the 219 maybe, I can't remember exactly where we were, you could see the stadium.
I make that drive every day.
And by the way, folks, I know you could see it from the 219.
Yep.
That's not what I mean, like when you're right next to it. I mean from a distance,
yes,
now.
Yes.
Like you could see the top of it,
yep,
right? Way more than you could make out the lights once in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, there's the lights of the stadium. No, like you could see there is a structure there.
Yeah, I mean, I make that drive every single day. 219 North, yep, heading from where I live to here in Amherst. And even when the old stadium was there, you barely could make out the lights to it. You barely could make out, you know, even the field house. This stadium, this structure looks like a spaceship.
Yes,
from distance, whether they are at Chestnut Ridge, I could even see it at some points here up in the north area, like, you know, on the 33, there's a part of the 33 where you,
yes,
kind of look down Bailey Avenue, and you could see off in the distance the stadium and the field house as well. Like, there, you faintly make it out, but it's massive. It is a massive structure, and it's going to be seen widely from whether you're up in a plane, whether you're on the 219 at Chestnut Ridge. It's going to be a marvel once it's done.
By the way, you said, and I do this all the time, you said old stadium. It is still the current stadium. It's not the old stadium yet.
Yes.
It will be the old stadium,
yes,
in a year.
It'll be the old stadium, and then quickly it'll be,
yes,
oh, that's where the old stadium used to be.
That's
because
right.
They're going to be working pretty close after everything's all opened up with the new stadium, that they're gonna tear it down, and I don't know what the plans are for where the old stadium is going to be, but I'm sure that's in the cards right now, and they're still talking it over.
All right, so if you go to WBN.com, you can check out. There is an article from May 12th,
mm-hmm,
that Brayton wrote. New Highmark Stadium remains on time in Orchard Park. You can Google that. You can find it. You can see some of these pictures, which are amazing, by the way. I'm looking at some of these pictures that you took. You also tweeted out, by the way, at Brayton J. Wilson. That might be the better way for people to see some of these tweets. Anything stand out to you when you're inside the stadium and go, oh my God, like that's going to be amazing?
Well, you've been on a tour with, yes, me before, Sal, and I think you'd agree with me there. When you're at field level, like the old stadium, the current stadium,
yes,
I'll put in your terms,
yeah,
it kind of just like flat, it's not flat, but like when it goes out, it's a lot less angled and it seems further away when you're at field level, the crowd and everything. This stadium, everything's
really
so
encloses
compact.
You, right?
It's enclosed.
Yeah, that's right.
It is amazing.
It's boxy, but in a good way.
They call it pitched. Exactly.
And I know, I know you're a little younger than me, so I don't know if you ever went to a game or any event at the Odd, but everybody always says it's like the Odd, and I get it. Because,
mm-hmm,
I used to sit in the oranges as a kid and look straight down.
Yeah, my dad too.
And unbelievable, right? And that's kind of what they're going for,
yes,
here.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's designed to make that football experience that much better. It's designed,
yeah,
to make the stadium that much louder, because a lot of people's pride the fact that Highmark Stadium is one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL, and it's wide open air. This stadium, I think it's designed where it's going to be even louder than what it is right now at the current stadium. And that kind of gets me excited, just because the way that you kind of sit almost on top of the field and everything is all interactive. I mean, we got the chance to get a little in-depth last year with what they're still designing with the stadium. It's just like everything is supposed to be connected. So fans at one end of the stadium, all they'd have to do is just walk around to the other end of the stadium.
Yes.
They don't lose view of the stadium itself in the field, but they it's
a lot like a baseball stadium. You go to Yankee Stadium, if you go to Cleveland, Pittsburgh, when you're walking the concourse, you can still watch the game being played.
360-degree view.
Yes, that's something that now you can't do that at the current stadium because you walk through your aisle, you go to the concession stand, even the Bisons. You go to Salem Field, you have to walk through that aisle there, and then you're getting concessions while the game's going on. So if something happens, you got to run out and go, oh, what just happened, right?
Yeah.
That'll be different here in the new stadium. Okay, and then last thing I want to ask you is, in the north end, there's a picture of the north end. Mm-hmm. That's where that real long kind of standing room bar is going to go and all of that area. That looks like that's coming along pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Every facet that we've been talked about with just like, oh, hey, the suites, the clubs are going to be on the one side. The suites are going to be on the other. The north end zone is going to be like this fun party area, the big screen that's going up. South area is going to be another fun area with another bar, something like that. It's all starting to come into place, which is really exciting to see because before we were in there, it was like, okay, here's where it's supposed to be. You can kind of see a little bit, but now it's like, okay, there's actually structure there. There's actually like you can actually see what the rendering was and how it's starting to come together. So, I mean, looking at it almost a year from it opening is a marvel. I mean, I can imagine if I get the chance to go back in there, you know, a little later on when they're starting to do more interior work and the outer facade there that the wind perforated steel that's going to be out there that starts to go up. I was talking to one of the stadium guys, the Bills guys, and he said they're starting to do some of that work towards the Southwestern Boulevard side of the stadium. And if you drive past there, you might start to notice there's some glass work there, brick work there, and some of that perforated steel is going up.
Would you agree that if you haven't been to the stadium since a game last year, you're in for a oh my gosh moment when you get there? Oh. Like, what is happening here?
Every day that I go there, I mean, I drive down the 219, and every once in a while, I'll just get off at Mile Strip, or I'll get off at 20A, and just decide, I'll go drive by the stadium.
Just go to the Bills store now, folks. And seriously, just go, because that's where somebody texted me last week. They're in from out of town. Like, hey, I'm in town. I really want to go to the Bills Stadium, take some pictures. And I think they thought they could literally like go into the new stadium. Like, first of all, you can't do that. But I said, your best bet is to go to the Bills store, take some pictures from across the street.
Yeah.
Because really, that you'll be as close as you can get right there.
And you can literally walk down the entire sidewalk right in front of the current Highmark Stadium, and you can get a really good view of that. You can, you know, I don't know if there's anything on Southwestern Boulevard that would allow you to pull off and see that side of it as well. But, I mean, there's areas you can drive, you could check it out, and it is amazing. Every time that I go down there, there's something new that I notice, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome looking.
Brayton Wilson joining us from our sister station WBEN here in Odyssey, Buffalo. Brayton has always been, for many years, kind of our NHL draft and prospect aficionado, and it's that season again. It's always that season, it seems like, in Buffalo when it comes to the Sabres and evaluating draft picks. Let me ask you this. Sabres with the 9th overall pick in this year's draft. Is this a good draft or bad draft?
Where the Sabres are situated, it's still fair where they're at.
Okay.
Once you get probably to pick 12, 13, that's where the drop-off starts to happen, maybe even pick 14. The prospects in this class, this draft really reminds me a lot of the 2014 draft in a way. That's the Aaron Ekblad draft, the Sam Reinhart, Leon Draisaitl, and Sam Bennett. A lot of hype was made about the three forwards, and then there was the one defensive prospect that a lot of people at the time were saying Aaron Ekblad was this generational type guy. He'd gotten exceptional status when he was 15 years old to play in the OHL. And Aaron Ekblad's turned out to be a very good defenseman, good two-way guy. But like, he doesn't have the same sort of like offensive two-way skating capabilities that Matthew Schaefer has. So he's like that guy atop the board as that perennial defenseman, maybe not generational, but really good at the top of his class. And then you got the three forwards in this class: Michael Misa, James Hagans, and Porter Martone. Hagans is more of that playmaker, skilled type of guy. Misa's that kind of do-it-all type of guy. He could be a playmaker. He can go score. He's kind of a clutch guy. And then you got Porter Martone, who's just a power forward, just a guy that's on the wing. He muscles his way everywhere he goes on the ice. Maybe some consistency issues is the thing that's going to maybe be frowned upon with him, but I mean, the upside with him is super high. So that's why I see this more as like a similar to 2014. But I mean, after the top four, top five,
those guys, by the way, are kind of consensus top four or five.
I would say so. Yeah,
the Sabres really don't have a shot at
yeah,
any of them, right?
And
unless they were straight up for them.
As always with drafts, there's going to be a couple. I mean, like last year with Anaheim, they took Beckett Seneca third overall, and everyone was like, this guy was maybe projected to be like late top 10 or even like the 12, 13 range. And Anaheim took a jump at him, and he's turned out to be a pretty good prospect, and I think he'll be a good player. But there's always that type of player that one team may see, like a team like Utah. They won the draft lottery, and they moved up to four from where they were at 14. Maybe they are looking at a situation where it's just like, well, we like a guy necessarily, you know, maybe not a Higgins or maybe not a Martone. Maybe we like a guy like Caleb Desnoyer or Anton Frondell down the middle. Those two are the best two-way forwards in the entire draft class, in my opinion, at least. And they may go there. It's going to shuffle around, but where the Sabres are at right now at ninth, they're in a good spot to get a good prospect if they want to stay there.
All right, give me a few names here that could be around when the Sabres pick that might be able to fit the Sabres.
So I'm really loving the idea of taking a defenseman where they're at number nine if he's available. Radim Mirka, he plays for Seattle in the Western Hockey League. He started off playing professionally in Czechia. He played, I think, 10 games before making the jump over to North America to play in Seattle. Really good, rangy, 6'6", 207-pound right shot defenseman. NHLers love their right shot defenseman in the Sabres. That's really their only need when you look at the prospect depth overall, or the need at the NHL level, is right-handed defenseman. And Radim Mirka would fit that bill. But he's just a super rangy guy. He's got great feet. He skates really well, moves around the ice for his size really well. Long reach, which is good defending, and then also protecting the puck in the offensive zone. When it comes to forwards, they could go a couple different ways. If they want another guy that's a skilled forward, one of my favorite guys in this draft is Victor Eklund. He's the younger brother of William Eklund, the Sharks prospect. He's a guy that's just go, 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 go. And it's similar to Zach Benson, but Victor Eklund plays with speed. He plays with tenacity. He's always on top of the puck. He's always in on the forecheck, aggressive on the backcheck. Zach Benson's kind of that more methodical guy. He's really smart and processes things, whereas Victor Eklund's just like, all right, I've got an objective. I'm just going full speed and just constantly on the go. He's a guy that I really like. If they want to go with a little more size and physicality at number nine, a couple of guys that are available include Roger McQueen, 6'5", nearly 200 pounds, played with Brandon in the Western Hockey League. He's an interesting prospect because a lot of people compare him to Tage Thompson, that big, lanky, right-handed shot type of guy. Only problem with him, he was dealing with a back injury for a good portion of the season, missed a lot of the year. I think he only played 17 regular season games, and in the playoffs he played, but a lot, that's the big question mark with him. And then the other guy that's really interesting, and I think I see him more so going to a team like the Boston Bruins just because he's that type of player, Brady Martin. He plays with the Sioux Greyhounds, 6 foot, 178 pounds. Not the biggest of guys, but from a draft pundits that I follow and watch and everything, they say he's arguably already one of the best hitters in all of hockey. Not just the NHL, not just the AHL or junior hockey. Every level of hockey, he's one of the best hitters. He just goes out there, he plays a good speed, good pace. He's not afraid to be physical, and he can bring some offense too.
I am definitely on team trade it, just so you know. The Sabres don't need any more prospects.
They
all we
don't.
Hear about is prospects every year. I don't care anymore.
Right, and if they can go out and make a trade to go get that guy, whether it's your number one forward or number one center or a scoring winger or whatnot, like that's the one thing that Kevin Adams has been trying to obtain, is the forward that can go out there and score goals and be a contributor, whether it be on the wing or at the number one center position. And listen, I like Josh Norris. I do. I'm very concerned about his injury history, especially as of late. He had a torn oblique that he tried to play through and couldn't finish out the season. And I think it's the right decision that he made, just to sit out when he could, just so he didn't impede on any of his off-season conditioning and workouts to get ready for next season. But the injury bug is always going to follow him around. He had two shoulder surgeries when he was with Ottawa. He comes here, plays with a torn oblique, then has to sit out the rest of the year. That's a big question mark. If they can find a way to move a piece, whether it be Bowen Byram, maybe Josh Norris is included in a trade like that, and you trade the number nine pick as part of it or whatnot to go get that number one guy, whether it's Elias Pettersson or whatnot, or somebody on the wing that can go help, you should look to make a deal like that.
Who's the goal? Was it Halak? Who's the goalie they had for like two games and traded a few years ago? They had a goalie on the roster, I thought.
Halak was a trade at the deadline in 2015 that was on the bench for one game and then traded.
Yes, that's right. Because when you just said, well, you could use maybe Josh Norris gets traded. I'm like, the guy would come in here and play two games, then he gets traded, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, and again, if they kept Josh Norris, I'd be very happy too. Because I think he's a super skilled guy. He can score. He's a good
two-way. I think what happened in that trade was the Ottawa Senators sacrificed some offensive skill for more availability.
Yes.
The Sabres sacrificed availability for more offensive skill. That's kind of what it came down to.
Yep. As long as Josh Norris stays healthy, he's going to score.
Yeah.
He's going to score. He's going to contribute. But the health is the biggest thing surrounding him going forward. It's similar to the Roger McQueen discussion, because this year he was injured for most of the year. And last year, the Blue Jackets took Caden Lindstrom with the fourth overall pick. He didn't even play for most of this year. He only came back in the Western Hockey League finals to help Medicine Hat win in the Western Hockey League, but he was injured for most of the year with a similar back injury. And like that's a lot of the things where it was just like Columbus took that risk, and a lot of teams saw that he couldn't play because of that injury, and I think a lot of teams now looking at McQueen are thinking the same thing. Like, is he really going to be available, and is he going to be that effective and healthy? Like, health is a big question mark with some of these prospects going forward.
Final Four starts tonight. NHL Eastern Conference Finals, then the Western Conference Finals, Florida against Carolina, Edmonton against Dallas. How do you see these?
Well, first off, I want to call out the NHL. What are you doing making the Panthers play on the second night after playing a Game 7 against Toronto? I know they really didn't get truly tested in that Game 7, but like the Dallas Stars and both the Stars and the Oilers have been off for a while. Why are they not playing Game 1 tonight over Florida and Carolina? That's just, aside from that, though, really, really great matchups. Again, we're going to see Dallas Stars in their third straight Western Conference Final, second straight against the Edmonton Oilers. I think Dallas is the more complete team than Edmonton is, but if they can't stop Draisaitl and McDavid from taking over games, you know, they're in trouble. Jake Oettinger is a very good goaltender. He's arguably the best goaltender in the NHL right now, along with Connor Hellebuck. I mean, I know that Hellebuck is going to win the Vezina Trophy as the best goaltender in the NHL, but Jake Oettinger in these playoffs has been phenomenal, and he's got to continue to step up that game. It's interesting with Dallas, though, because three straight Western Conference Finals. If you can't beat Edmonton or you can't get to the Cup Final this year, when are you going to get back with Peter DeBoer? Like, that's the interesting discussion. And then in the Eastern Conference, real quick, rematch of the 23 Eastern Conference Final between Carolina and Florida. The big question is, can Carolina actually win a game in the conference finals? They haven't won since they won the Stanley Cup, which never actually happened, by the way, in 2006. That year never happened. The playoffs ended after Game 6 of the Sabres-Hurricanes series.
You know, it's funny. We were at the dinner table the other night, and my son said, I said to Max, hey, if the Leafs lose tonight, which they did, they'll tie the all-time record for most consecutive Game 7 losses.
Mm.
And he looks at me, and my 11-year-old says, well, wouldn't the Sabres have a close streak? And I'm like, not really. I said, but he goes, well, they've lost a couple Game 7s, and he kind of knew. And I said, let me tell you about what happened in Game 7 in 2006. And I went through the history lesson. And the takeaway from that conversation was him asking me, Dad, what's a staph infection?
Oh, God.
That's what happened. We had to have that lesson. Had to have that talk. We had the talk. That was the talk I had
with
my son.
I think we've had this conversation in past shows before, but that is the only time in my entire life as a sports fan that I've ever cried was after that Game 7 in 2006, because I think most people knew if the Sabres were healthy, if they beat the Hurricanes, they go.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner, and May's packed with reasons to celebrate, whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family. Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
On to play Edmonton. They're crushing Edmonton.
How old were
in the
you?
Final. Quick math, I was 14.
Okay. Because first time for me was exact same scenario, but I was 10. It was Brad Park in overtime in game 7 against the Sabres.
Yeah.
That was the first time. That was, yeah. I bawled my little eyes out going to sleep that night. Hey, yeah. Thank
as,
you.
As a yeah. teen, yeah.
No, know, I know. I get it. I get it. It still sings. I'm sure a lot of people out there with you. With
I'll
you.
Say I'm going to pick Florida. Okay. I actually think Dallas will do it this time. I think Dallas is going to upend Edmonton. Ooh. I'll pick Dallas to do it. I mean, I obviously could be wrong.
Edmonton is coming off 2 straight shutouts.
Yeah. But you know what? Again, I think Dallas has the more complete team, yep. and I think if they can finally get guys like Jason Robertson yep. and Miro Heiskanen going from the blue line, and Jake Oettinger continues to play strong, I think they're more complete team. There's just bigger question marks with Edmonton
coming in on this. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely,
Brayton Wilson,
thanks for having
everybody.
Me on.
WBEN, follow him along at Brayton J. Wilson on X, and of course WBEN.com. He was at the stadium a couple weeks ago. Has an article up from May 12th. You can go Google it, see all the pictures, also the tweets, and also on the NHL prospects. Which, by the way, we'll be hearing a lot more from you, I think, as we get closer to the draft. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll take a timeout here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. The Tush Push, and how about the NBA? Their Final Four as well. I got to play you something. I got to play you something really, really cool when we come back here on WGR. Chris Johnston, who covers the Leafs for The Athletic, is at Locker Cleanout, among other reporters, but I just saw his tweet on Mitch Marner. You tell me how you read this. You ready? Josh, ready for this? This is Mitch Marner today in Locker Cleanout. Mitch Marner asked if he wants to be a Maple Leaf next year. Here's his quote. I've always loved my time here. Loved being here. That is saying a million words without saying a million words. Is it not?
That's... He's saying everything in the past tense. He said all the stuff in past tense in the postgame, too.
Mitch Marner, when asked if he wants to be a Maple Leaf next year, quote, I've always loved my time here, loved being here. I think that's a goodbye. I think that's a goodbye from Mitch Marner. He also said he hasn't had a chance to discuss his future with his wife since the Leafs season ended. He spoke fondly of his time in Toronto and expressed disappointment how the season ended, but he didn't say he wanted to be back. Didn't say he said he wanted to leave, but didn't say he wanted to be back. Okay. Mitch Marner. So, real quick on this tush push, because I've teased it and I want to bring it up. The new language from how Green Bay is apparently proposing the tush push ban. The new language apparently is kind of going back to what the rule was before 2006. And I brought this up several times before. When I was growing up, you could never push a runner forward, ever. You also could not pull a runner from, you runner, he's running forward. He's going, he's at the 30, he's at the 20, he's at the 10. You can't take him from the 10 to the 5 by pulling him, right? As an offensive lineman, as a receiver, as a tight end blocking for him. You can't do that. It's never been a part of the game. I've never liked it. It shouldn't be a part of the game. That rule kind of just mysteriously went off the books. No one ever even enforced it. And apparently the rule was because, the reasoning was, because officials kind of couldn't see it happening the right way with these piles of players and you got these big piles and guys pushing forward. So they said, let's just kind of get rid of it. Okay? I've never liked it. When the tush push came in, I never liked that either. Like, I just never, it never has sat well with me, this particular play. The way it looks in football should not be a part of football to me. I get why teams do it. The argument is, you don't like it, stop it. But it's not about safety. Yes, I know that there's a lot of that out there. Sean McDermott's talked about it, competition committee. That's never been it for me. It's not about a team having an advantage or being really good at it, team being bad at it, anything like that. In fact, the Buffalo Bills are amazing at it. They're one of the best teams, if not the best team in the league, actually, over Philadelphia. I know that the Bills, it did not work out for them in the AFC Championship game. I get it. But the Bills are great at it. They have this quarterback who's perfect for it. I don't like the play. I don't think the play has a spot in football. I am all for the ban of the tush push. It's not because I'm for the ban of the tush push. I am for going back to the way football had the rule written, which should still be a rule, which is you can't push someone forward and you can't pull someone forward. I don't like it. I just think it's not part of the game. Has nothing to do with the Eagles. Has nothing to do with the AFC Championship game. It's just something that I believe in football. So that's my thought on it. I would like to see it go away because I think we should start penalizing teams and always should have been penalizing teams for putting your hands on someone and pushing them forward or for going around the other way and grabbing them and pulling them forward, which actually is probably even like worse. But to me, it's the same. It's the same. Can't push, can't pull. To me, it's not ban the tush push. It's stop pushing and pulling. That's what it is. It's football, and it's never had, to me, never been a part of what they should really allow. So that's where I fall on that, and I always have. The new rule proposal is proposing a 10-yard penalty for any offensive teammate pushing or pulling a ball carrier anywhere on the field. There you go. And I know, like, there's a lot of people who talk about the league, watch the league, cover the league, who are like, you're just taking away a fun aspect of it. I'm like, I don't know. I don't think you are. I think you're making it more challenging for an offensive player to gain yards. I mean, everything else designed to help the offense. Here's one that actually gives back to the defense a little bit. Let them tackle somebody without someone else 300-pound lineman pushing them. Let them tackle somebody without some dude grabbing them from the front of his jersey and pulling them forward. Why should that be allowed? Let the defensive guy make a tackle. And if he can't, he can't. That's the way I look at it. We also have a rule that's being talked about to maybe tweak the onside kick setup zone for the receiving team. So it actually could result in more onside kick recoveries, which I'm all for as well, because you don't get that anymore. We should have something in place in football that allows a team that's down that just scored to try to get the ball back a little bit easier. And I know you can do onside kicks now, but they're so hard. And they used to be a lot, not easy, but at least more doable and gettable. But then, of course, there were a lot of, you got these guys running at each other full speed and just cleaning each other's clocks, and that was never good. So I understand why they went away from it. We'll see how all this goes down at the NFL owners' meetings. Who is fired up for Rick Smits and Reggie Miller against John Starks and Charles Oakley? Woo! I am. Oh, wait. No, that was the 1990s. That's what I think about when I think about the 1990s Pacers and Knicks. And when I think about Pacers and Knicks, I mean, I think about the 1990s. I think about some really incredible series they had. Seriously. And I'm not saying this in a joking or jest way. Like, it was fun. Pacers, Knicks, Bulls, a little bit of the Pistons. Like, it was fun around that time. Pistons were a little before that, but they still had their moment, right? Sprinkling a couple other teams here and there. But it was really Knicks, Bulls, Pacers in the 90s, most of the 90s, for me, growing up. And watch, it was great. And the atmosphere at Madison Square Garden with Spike Lee, Reggie Miller, and those three-pointers he hit with just like, 10, 15 seconds left of the game and the steal, another three. He's doing the choke sign to Spike Lee. It was great. And the Knicks were kind of bullies with the way they would play a little bit. And Charles Oakley, like, you did not want to go near that dude when you're going in for a layup. You had an uncontested. Yeah, Rick Smits. Tall, kind of goofy-looking center, but he was good. He could play. Would lead the team in scoring sometimes. And Reggie, he was fun. He was polarizing. So, when I saw Knicks Pacers, right? And I'm not a Knicks fan, but it is fun to watch them. They're a fun. The NBA is so much better when the Knicks are good and Madison Square Garden is rocking. And I am not a Knicks fan. I actually like the Pacers. Like, I think the way they play now with Halliburton and that group, I like them a lot. It's going to be a fun series. But when I think about it, like today I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh man, this is cool, right? Knicks, Pacers, it just brought me back to my 20s and I guess early 30s, right? But it just brought me back to the 1990s and what it was like in the Eastern Conference. And I went on YouTube and I'm like, I got to watch like the beginning or some of these games. And I ran across the 1994 Game 7 at MSG Open between the Knicks and the Pacers. I think it was at MSG. I have to go back and look to make sure. But either way, yes, wait, two in New York, two in Indiana. I think it was MSG. 1994, Game 7, NBA on NBC intro. Here's Bob Costas. This is 2 minutes worth your time.
They call it the NBA's second season. In truth, it is the real season. And tonight, only one team can earn the remaining invitation to the NBA Finals. The Knicks were supposed to get there, and they started out that way, taking the first two at home. But when Indiana responded in kind at Market Square, the series began to take shape, tied at two. Still, it lacked artistry. It lacked theater. Game five changed that. Game five and Reggie Miller. The tension and drama continued through the Knicks' revival in Game 6. And now, here they are, the Pacers in their 98th game. 48 minutes from an unexpected achievement. And the Knicks, in this, the 100th game of a grinding season, 48 minutes from what they were merely expected to do. 48 minutes, beginning now.
The NBA on NBC.
And there it is. There it is. How about that? That was cool, wasn't it? That's cool. Bob Costas, what a great storyteller. You want to hear something? We played this before. If you ever want to hear...
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner, and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Some go back and listen to Bob Costas, the intro to the Notre Dame Florida State game in like 94, I think it was. It's unbelievable. It's great.
He was on a tear in 94.
I think it was that year, but he was everything. He was everything in that time period for NBC. Real quick, let's go to Mike in South Buffalo. Hi, Mike, you're on WGR.
Yeah, Sal, you do great work. You couldn't be more wrong on the tush push, though.
Okay.
Football is a game of blocking and attempting to not get blocked. Like, the football's related to rugby and Aussie rules football. They're like cousins. And pushing a pile of guys is like the essence of, maybe it's because you were a receiver and then I played in high school, I was a lineman. Like, that's the meat and potatoes of what football should be. Snap the ball.
Yeah, block people, block people, block people. That means you could go from behind them and grab their butt and keep pushing them. That's a difference. Just because they're cousins doesn't mean all the rules have to be the same, by the way.
No, I hear you. And the rule, I just think this is a rule that's wrong.
Did you ever complain about it before 2006?
They didn't really call the penalty much. So I wasn't, you know, like, that's part of the reason I think they did away with it from recent stuff I've heard. I like it. What about pulling him forward?
Just running up, grabbing his jersey and yanking him forward. That should be allowed?
To me, pulling is a little weird. It's closer to what a face mask looks like, and I don't know if I think that's appropriate. I don't think you should be able. It should be similar to when you block an opponent, you can't hold them. So I don't think you should be able to grab his shoulder pads or his jersey and yank him. But if you can get your arms in a spot and move his body, that's
like
hug
him,
moving the ball in the body. Yeah, hug him, you know, like act like you're blocking him. Like in the rules, they call it blocking either side. But
I don't agree with you. I think blocking is fine. And somebody tweeted me and said, so you don't think a running back now that's in a pile should be keep moving? No, that's fine. That's blocking forward and everybody's just going and going and going. What I'm talking about is when you see a running back in a pile, let's say, at this person's example, and someone runs in and literally pushes the guy, puts his hands on him directly to push him forward, I don't think that should be allowed. It wasn't allowed for many, 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 many years in football.
Yeah, I think it's a team game, and the defense can tackle as a team, and the offense should be able to advance as a team.
Okay, that's fine. I'll give you one counter, Mike, and I appreciate the phone call here that someone brought up at the last owners' meetings. If that's the case, then why don't you let the defense line up over the center and everybody just kind of push forward? That's illegal, actually. Like on a extra point or something. Can't do that. Can't, you know? I mean, they're not getting their turn at it. So, it's just interesting stuff. Good call. I'm not with you on that. This is something that was a part of football for decades and decades and decades, and then they allowed it. And I don't think they should have. I'd like to go back to when it wasn't allowed. We'll take a time out here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show and wrap things up. All right, good call from Mike. I also have Josh, who's been tweeting me, getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. This is a good way to say it for me, okay? And this is, and by the way, Mike said, well, you played wide receiver, I played line. That might be true, Mike, but listen, the current high school rule, to me, is the right rule. And this is courtesy of my friend Al, who is a high school official listening, who texted me in. So thank you, Al. And he reminded me, and that's right. The current high school rule is you can push the pile of people. You can't specifically push the runner. Like, that's what I would rather go to. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't care if there's a pile of people and there's guys pushing because there's guys, you know, all around it. And I guess it's a little ambiguous if there's a guy, well, he ran in and he's pushing the pile. I don't love that either, but I'd be fine with that. What I'm against is specifically putting your hands on the runner from behind the ball carrier and pushing him. Also putting your hands on him from in front and pulling him. The current high school rule addresses this. It's called aiding the runner. It was a rule on the books in football at all levels up until 2005. I'd have to go and see what the college rule is, but the NFL then just got rid of it. It's like, hey, you can push him, you can pull him. You shouldn't have to do it. You shouldn't be allowed to do it. So yeah, pushing the pile to me, Josh, Mike, is fine. It's a pile of people and you're in there with it and someone's from behind and you're blocking forward. And you're running for it. But putting your hands on the runner and pushing, I don't like. That's why, to me, it's not the banning of the tush push I'd like to see. It's the getting rid of, it's going back to the aiding the runner rule. We'll take a, we'll leave here now and take you over to Sabres Live, One Bills Live after that, then Shit with the Bulldog here. Thanks for being with me on WGR.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner, and May's packed with reasons to celebrate, whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family. Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.